Earlier this week, I was reading a book, actually, about a Buddhist book. And it was about Yogacara and Vasubandhu, deep in the realm of Buddhist teachings, traditional teachings. But in the introduction, there was this very sweet anecdote that the one who had written the book on Vasubandhu's 30 verses. There was this woman from Thailand, Varame Kabelsingh, who, and I won't go into it, but really I'm maybe in the 60s or 70s, not that long ago, became actually the first Thai woman to be fully ordained as a nun. Okay, the lineage had died out, and there was this tradition within Thai tradition for women of kind of being sort of semi-nuns. So they didn't have a lot of respect. So this very brave, courageous nun went and got ordination from Taiwanese who had the full transmission and then came back to Thailand, where she had a very rough time. But anyhow, but became quite famous, and she really was a breakthrough woman for that very patriarchal society. So at some point, a young man asked, this is the anecdote, a young man asked her, how do you keep the 311 precepts? So those of you familiar with Buddhism, you know, lay people, we have about 5 or 10. And monks have about 250. Nuns have 311. You know, these are kind of guidelines for living, and some of them are very particular. I said, you know, so he says, well, you know, how do you keep these 311 precepts? And she replies, I keep only one precept. Surprise, the young man asked, and what is that? She answered, I just watch my mind. Very powerful. I just watch my mind. That's the precept of all precepts. Okay? Because precepts are, you know, I mean, what's a precept? A moral precept. They're what? Any English teachers here? A precept is what? Now, this is not a trick question. It's a guideline, kind of a rule, something that tells us do this, don't do that. You know, they're kind of rules, they're guidelines, you know, from any way. Which is very interesting, you see. Shows you what an aware woman this is, because many of us have all kinds of moral, ethical, personal precepts and guidelines that we want to run our lives by, but we find it difficult to do. Right? I mean, it's very easy to go to church. It's very easy to, you know, say I believe in the Ten Commandments and the Golden Rule and all that. Much more difficult to what? Practice it, right? I mean, we all know that, whether we're in a religious tradition, a non-religious tradition, you know, it's much easier to, what do they say, much easier to talk the talk than walk the walk, right? So what does this nun say? She, this is the missing piece, you see. Because our observation of the precepts, which really have a lot to do with kind of more overt things, you know, the things we do with our body or don't do with our body, our words, the way we speak, all of that is being conditioned by what? Our mind, you see. And in most traditions these days, they don't have this way to observe and understand one's mind, which is really what is conditioning our actions, you know, of how we relate to other people, how we act with other people, what we say to other people, right? So she, you know, wisely says, how do I observe the 311 precepts? I observe the one precept. I watch my mind, right? When I watch my mind, then it's much easier to observe the 311. If I'm not watching my mind, it's very difficult, isn't it? Now, what this reminded me of, and then we'll talk about it, is in the Chinese, what's called the Chan tradition. In Japanese, it's called Zen. There are these famous kind of anecdotes, let's just call them, that go back, in these cases, to the eighth century. Right. So this modern day nun in Thailand is, you know, 20 years ago, and this is 1400, 1300 years ago. So one day Huizang was working in the kitchen, and Matsu was the teacher, asked him, "What are you doing?" Right? Kind of an obvious, you know, you might think this is a stupid question, right? I mean, the guy's in there working in the kitchen. Teacher comes in and says, "What are you doing?" So he's up to something. He says, "I am tending an ox." Okay. And so the master says, "How do you tend an ox?" And Huizang replied, "When he wants to enter the grass, I grab his nostrils and pull him away." "You are really tending an ox," commented the teacher. Okay, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then there is another dialogue from two other well-known masters in that tradition. They're probably about which are not that much later, maybe a couple of generations later in the Zen traditions. And it has a little dilemphasis, but you'll see how it all ties in. So this is Ta'an S. Pai Chang. "I want to know the Buddha. Who is he?" Right? So this is a very, in the Zen tradition, which puts so much emphasis on realization, not on scholarly knowledge, it's not like I want to understand the Buddha's teachings. I want to know the Buddha. I want to know the enlightened one, face to face. Who is he? Right? So there's a lot in this, but this is, it's a very direct, deep question. Right? And Pai Chang, the master, said, "It is very much like seeking an ox while you are riding on one." It is very much like, you see, he doesn't give him an intellectual answer, but he points him in the right direction. Right? It's very much, you see, he and this is it, you know, we want intellectual answers to our questions. But a good teacher is pointing us in the direction of discovering it for ourselves, you see. So he says, "I want to know the Buddha, who is he?" And he says, the master says, "It is very much like seeking an ox while you're already riding on one." So then the student says, "What shall I do after I know that?" Right? "I know that I am already riding the ox." Or we might say, "I know that I'm already a Buddha." And the master said, "It is like a man," but it's like a woman, a person. I won't say man. "It is like a person going home riding on an ox." Well, that sounds nice, doesn't it? Just kind of riding on the ox. That's what it's like. You know it. And then he says, "Now, how should I take care of it all the time?" That is this ox. And the master says, "It is like a person tending an ox. He looks after it with a stick in his hand and does not let intrude upon unripe crops." Later on, Ta'an, the student, became a teacher in his own right, and he told the assembly, he must have been giving a Dharma talk. He said, talking about himself, he calls himself Ta'an, this is referring to himself, "has been for 30 years been taking the food at Kueshan." Kueshan is his famous temple. "And then has been returning it to Kueshan's latrine." Okay, sort of telling you what he thinks about all that. "I did not study Kueshan's Chan," which means I didn't study the Zen there. "All I did was looked after a water buffalo. If it went astray from the path and entered the grass, then I would pull it away. If it intruded on other people's crops, I would flog it with a whip in order to tame it. For a long time, it was looking miserable." having to listen to a human voice all the time. But now it has become a white ox in an open field, always on my side. Spending the day in vast open fields, even if someone tries to take advantage of it, it does not go away. So it's quite beautiful. And really, in this very simple, direct way, encapsulates the path, right? From beginning to end, right? So this, you know, this initial teaching from this Thai nun of what is the essential precept she follows? I watch my mind. I can't tell you how key. I mean, if you don't do anything else after today, do this. Watch your mind. Right? Now, many of us are too busy, aren't we? We're too busy what? Watching everybody else's mind. You see? So this is a 180 for most of us, right? Bill's nodding over there, right? We're watching everybody else's mind. We're watching everybody else's behaviors. We have the word on everybody, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? And now through modern technology, we can watch the whole world's mind, right? We can watch people's minds and have opinions about people's minds all over the world, right? You know? And because the news is constantly updated now, every 10 minutes you can be kind of checking in on what, you know, other people's minds are up to, right? And generating all kinds of thoughts about that and opinions about that and emotions about that. Is that clear? So, I mean, if you find that you're overwhelmed these days, it's because in the old days, you know, there were just a few people around you that you could be observing and watching their mind. Now you can watch every, you can go on Facebook, right? You'd be a little bored, right? Well, whose minds can I watch now, you know? Right? I mean, is that true? You see, and when you see it that way, you say, well, that's what I'm really doing. Now, the problem with all that, and I won't go into all that, that's another Dharma talk, is I'm so busy watching the minds of everybody else in the world, and you know, I have no time to do the most important thing, is watch my own mind. Because at the end of the day, what am I watching everybody else's mind with? What am I generating all these opinions and judgments with? What is all the emotions that are coming up? What are they arising in? My own mind, right? But I don't see that because I'm too busy looking out there. Is that clear? So this is a fundamental, radical, all-encompassing shift. If you really want to heal and transform yourself, is turn in this direction. Just doing that will have a major transformative effect on your life. Right? Because when you watch your own mind, what do you see? What are you watching? What does it mean, watch your mind? What are you watching? You're watching thoughts. You're aware of what thoughts are arising in your mind, right? You're watching your stories. You're watching your dramas, but you're watching them rather than fully participating in them, right? You're watching them, right? You're watching your emotions as they arise. You're watching the memories, you're watching the fantasies, you're watching the projections, you're watching, right? There's a lot going on in your mind. Have you noticed that? From the moment we wake up throughout the day to we go to bed at night, things are arising in their mind, in our mind. And it is those things that are conditioning our life. Right? Deluded people, and I'm talking about the world, including us, deluded people think our minds and behaviors and our thoughts and our feelings and our mind states is all conditioned by what? Yeah, what's going on out there? Now, I'm not saying that those conditions don't have an effect, but the prime thing that is conditioning our minds is our thoughts, feelings, perceptions, our actions, body, speech, and mind. Right? And if we're going to make a change, we have to first become aware of what's going on in there. Right? If you want to make a change in the external world, what do? You just go running out? Grab a sign and just start running up and down Nebraska? What? What do you do first? Chris is laughing. You don't think that's a good idea, Chris? Okay. Because if you want to make a change in the world, what do first? What? What? Well, no, I'm not even going there. I'm just saying, let's say you know nothing about changing yourself, but let's say you want to make a real significant change in the world. Yeah. You're going to go, well, what's the problem? And what could be causing the problem? And what things could contribute to a change in the problem? You see what I'm saying? There's got to be some of that first, and then before we act. Is that clear? Right? In other words, we gather data. We kind of look into things. We try to understand what's going on, right? And right, so are there other ways of the world can be doing what they're doing? Is that true? I mean, it's kind of simple, right? I mean, it's so simple that unfortunately most of our politicians kind of it's too simple for them, so they don't get that. But we understand that if you want to make a significant, meaningful change in the world, we need to have an understanding of what's going on and why it's going on that way. And, okay, is that clear? Watching your mind is that process, but within yourself. Right? Before we start, making all these changes, reading all these books, we need to kind of go, what is the condition of my mind? Right? What kind of thoughts are arising all day? Where do I get hooked? Where do I get stuck? Do I live in the present or am I just living in fantasy half my life? Right? Am I mostly living in the past and the future? Right? Or am I really present to anything? And all that can be discovered very simply by watching our mind. But for many of us, it sounds easy, doesn't it? Right? Right, Chris? Sounds easy. And yet the problem is what? We are so addicted, habituated to looking out there. It almost seems like a monumental effort to stay focused on our own mind. Right? Right? I mean, we could be on Facebook for hours. That's a piece of cake. Right? Watching other people's minds, postings, activities. Pictures. Right? I mean, we do that effortlessly, right? Right? But yet, watching my own mind, attending to my own behavior, looking at the causes of what's causing me to act the way I do, respond the way I do, it's like, ooh, that's hard. This is hard, isn't it? You know what I mean? This meditation stuff, this mindfulness stuff, this self-awareness. Whew, this is hard. You know what I mean? People kind of do it for 20 minutes. They're exhausted. I got to get up and see what's going on the internet. You know what I mean? Got to check my email, Right? Why do we do that? Because it's easy. Because that's what we're used to. And this seems hard just because we're not used to it. You know, our eyes are used to looking always out there and not here. And coming back to Chris, you know, how do you learn how to do it? You got to practice. In the beginning, 5-10 minutes seems like a great strain, right? And it's not because it's so difficult, because it's just, we're so uncomfortable with this. It's a learning curve, right? But I assure you, if you continue with the practice, it develops the ability to, even as you're going through your day, that there's a part of you watching your mind. You're aware of what's going on inside you. You're aware of what thoughts are arising, what feelings are arising, what stories you're telling yourself about this and that. You're aware of your mind state. Is my mind state at ease, or is it agitated? Is it happy? Is it unhappy? Is it relaxed? Is it stressed? You know, you're aware of yourself. You're aware of your mind, not really yourself. Yourself appears in your mind, but that's another whole story. I keep one precept. I watch my mind. I mean, again, and she's not saying anything that's new. I mean, that's in the meditative traditions. That is a key pith teaching. Watch your mind. There is no better teaching practice than that. If you have to reduce your practice, if you only have time for one thing, watch your mind. And stop watching everybody else's mind. Because all your watching of other people's minds, and are we not all very good at that? Are we not professionals? Right? As Chris said, are we not well practiced in watching everybody else's mind? Yes. But if I said to you, where has it gotten you? Has it made your mind more peaceful? Right? More open? More relaxed? More at ease? Right? Attending to everybody else? Please ask yourself that question. My constant obsession with what's going on in the external world, where does it get me? You know, we just came back a couple of weeks ago. We do a 7-day retreat up at a retreat center in North Carolina, right? Silent, wonderful meditative retreat. You know, and like around the fourth day, I introduced the notion to people, are you aware that you have not checked your email in 4 days? You have no idea what's going on in the world. You have not checked the news in 4 days. Right? How are you? How are you? And everybody said, great. Great. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So, first precept, watch our mind. Everybody clear? You know, and the practices of mindfulness and meditation are about that. Actually, in the Buddha's teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness, and mindfulness is his earliest formulation of a meditative tradition. I mean, there are many others that came later. You know, the four foundations of mindfulness of the body, breath, mindfulness of sensations, mindfulness of the mind, as the Buddha taught. Right? So in our development of our skill at being mindful, right? Mindfulness of the mind, watching the mind, observing the mind is fundamental. It is very difficult to make any significant personal spiritual change in one's life if one's not doesn't have that kind of self-awareness. Because it is so easy to fool ourselves. Right? Has anybody noticed that? We believe our own garbage. Right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? I mean, we're great at seeing other people's garbage. That's just garbage. But my garbage, brilliant. insightful. Or even if it's not that, we're very understanding to our own garbage. Okay, we have to be self-aware. Right. But then, let me talk about this second one. We'll see how far we can get. He says, so I'm tending an ox. This is very interesting. It points to view the practice, right? Now, obviously, he's not tending an ox in the kitchen. He's doing what? He's stirring the food or he's chopping vegetables, right? That's what he's doing with his body, right? And that's his practical function. And obviously, his mind is very engaged in it. He's not cutting himself. I mean, so there is a definite concentration awareness. But at the same time, what is he doing? There's a part of his mind that is observing what he's doing. He's tending his ox, right? Now, again, if any of you have ever been to Asia or other places where they have water buffaloes or oxes, you will notice something very unique, that they have these big water buffaloes, right? Thousands of pounds, I don't know. They're big, right? And oftentimes, the person who is tending the ox, the water buffalo, is a child, right? You see these little kids running around watching these animals that are probably 30, 40 times as big as them and could just knock them over in a second. Well, what is their power? The nose ring, right? They got a nose ring right through their most delicate part, and it's attached to a rope, and if that water buffalo or ox acts up in any way, they just give it a little tug. Right? So it doesn't take a lot of strength, does it? It just takes the right point to be attached to. Right? So it's very interesting that this little child has this power over this big thing. I am tending my ox. This mind, in a certain way, is big, right? Full of thoughts and feelings and urges and dramas and impulses and desires and fears and angers and resentment, right? It's like big, or so it appears. But you just get to that essential point of it, which is just this awareness. Because every thought, feeling, and perception always arises as one thought, one feeling. Right? In the moment. Everything arises just as a single thing. And when you know that and you can see it, tending your ox at that point is easy. That's the essential point. That's the nose ring. So that's why this moment-to-moment awareness that we're trying to develop is so essential. You know, many people go, ooh, you know, anger management, you know, fear management, very difficult, right? Because when people notice the anger, notice the fear, it's when it's what? What? Full blown, right? Whew. Right? Whew. Just enraged, angry, hurt, disappointed, scared, worried, right? It's like full blown. It's very hard to control it then, isn't it? Right? Right? That's like, you know, the kid trying to control the ox without the nose ring. When that bull's enraged, I just run for cover. Right? And that's the problem with most of us. We are trying to make an intervention when already it is big. You know, we don't have it clipped to the nose. Mindfulness is the clip. Right, when you just are aware that anger has arisen in you, Disappointment has arisen in you. Sadness has arisen in you. Fear has arisen in you. Whatever it is that's arising in you, it always arises as one thought first. If you see it and you can intervene at that point, it's not that hard. Right? When he wants to enter the grass, how do you tend an ox? When he wants to enter the grass, I grab his nostrils and pull him away. So what is he saying? He's saying, yeah, you know, what's my ongoing practice? I am aware. And I'm fully present to what I'm doing in the kitchen, chop, chop, chop. But I'm also watching I'm tending my ox, right? And if the ox starts, entering the grasses, and you'll see, actually, if you go to Asia, you'll see, they're going down the road. The kids are bringing they're taking the buffaloes wherever they're taking them, and they're coming home or going there. And what do the buffaloes want? They're going down the road. There are fields on all the sides. What do the buffaloes want to do? They want to get into the field, eat the rice shoots. They want to mess around. Right? That's what they want to do all the time. Right? When he says, I grab his nostrils, he doesn't mean he gets down, grabs a nostril, which maybe they do in a pinch. It means I just give a tug. Give it just a tug. The rope. And right away, this big ox turns away from going toward the field. What are you doing? I am tending an ox. How do you tend an ox? When he wants to enter the grass, I grab his nostrils and pull him away. You are really tending an ox. Any questions just about this and before we continue on? So getting back to our questions about practice, this is what we're practicing. Okay? Anybody ask you what you're doing? Just say, I'm tending my ox. Or I'm watching my mind. But again, I'm not just watching it, I'm tending it. See, this is important. Watching is the first step. Watching is that self-awareness. Watching is that mindfulness of the mind and its contents. Okay? But spiritual practice is more than just being self-aware. You can be a total, you can be a total narcissist, jerk, and be aware that you are. So that's why mindfulness in itself is not transformative. There has to be in context in which this is unfolding. Is that clear? And the context for someone on, say, on the Buddhist path is to free myself of suffering and delusion and to wake up and be free and to have a mind that's filled with wholesome mind states. Instead, so there's a criteria that each of us has to have, right? So those kids, when their parents send them out with a water buffalo in the morning, it's not like, let them go wherever they want. Right? No. It's you take them along the road to they're often to these mud places. They love to get in the muck. And they're also taking places to graze, but they're specific places. And you can't get into all your neighbor's fields. There's a criteria for tending the ox. It's not like free range. Many people think, I just need to be mindful. Right? No. Mindfulness helps us transform and change. That's why we practice mindfulness. So we can have a better life. So we can be happier individuals. So we can make good choices. So be wary of a lot of people are selling mindfulness these days as a thing. you know, mindfulness in and of itself does have abilities, but it's really how it's in the Buddhist tradition, in the meditative tradition, there's mindfulness, concentration, and insight. These are the three components of the meditative path. Mindfulness is the ground, because we have to be present, and we have to have this ability to recollect and remember what we're doing. Oh, that's right, I'm supposed to be concentrating on my breath, right? I'm not supposed to be sitting here thinking about, what happened 2 days ago, or, you know, what I'm having for lunch. Oh, see, that's mindfulness. It reminds us what we're supposed to be doing and where we're supposed to be. So that's all mindfulness. But again, there has to be criteria. The kids need the criteria. Where they're taking the ox, how to tend an ox. Those are many practices that we do. So any questions about so far? And then we'll take a look at this last one. Any questions? I mean, anything not clear? Not clear just intellectually, but like in how to practice this. Again, the silence is because everybody's clear, or you're just looking forward to lunch and hoping it'll end early or something? Yes. You know what? You're absolutely right.
So, I've been meditating for a long time, but I consider in the meditation an absolute bliss.
Yeah. Right. So the question is, I get somebody up there going, repeat the question. So the question is, there's a problem. And the problem is, the external world and a lot of what's going on there is entertaining. It's interesting. It can be pleasurable. It can be fun, right? And I find that I get pulled away from, you know, my spiritual pursuits. Anybody else know about that one? Yeah, all right. Now, again, I say there's a path here, and there's lots of teachings in this path that talk about this world and the pleasures of the world and what they're really about and how to understand them. And that's very important too. You know, people who only, you know, like, again, I'm just, you know, my expertise is in Buddhism. I'm not, so this is all I can speak to. But the Buddha put forth a path, an eightfold path, the six paramitas. I mean, it's a comprehensive path of which meditation is very key. But it's not the whole path. There's a lot of study involved. So we understand, in Buddhism, it's called view. Right? View is essential. How do I view this world? How do I view the comings and goings and the changes of this world? You know, do I see it as something intrinsically pleasurable and worthy of pursuit or not? Right? Do I see things as permanent or do I see things as impermanent? Do I see things as solid or do I see them as made of parts? Right? Do I see the activities of the world as ultimately satisfying or ultimately unsatisfying? So view and the cultivation of view is very much part of the Buddhist teachings, because you're absolutely right. If our meditative practice is a kind of like unto itself and not connected to right view, It's very difficult to continue, because we get, and again, the Buddha wrote this 2,600 years ago, right? We are under, I'm about to say we're under war here, right? The forces of delusion, the forces of ignorance, the forces of the immediacy of distraction and pleasure are very sophisticated. And they have invented media that are so entertaining and so easily acceptable and so easily get into the hardwiring of the brain, you know, that we are, it's, you know, in the Buddhist time, I mean, it was like what? I mean, what was going on? Another sunny day, you know what I mean? It was like, you know, got time to take the water buffalo down to the pond. I mean, that was like, you know what I mean? There wasn't, every couple of months they'd have a festival, you know what I mean? There'd be something. But I mean, there was a very different kind of life, right? I mean, we have a life that we can be constantly entertained. And it's we have to be very careful. I was telling some people the other day, I was taking a walk early in the morning at Lowry Park. Everybody knows Lowry Park around the corner. And I see this very nice scene. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning. I see a man there pushing his two young children on the swings. How sweet. Now, as I get closer, you know what I noticed? He's pushing them with one hand. The other hand, he's on, you know what I mean? He's like, and every now and then he'd look back to the child, probably make sure he hasn't pushed her off or anything. You know? But I mean, it was like, you know, there it is, right? That's modern America, right? So like, even when he's going to spend time with his children, he's only half engaged. And this thing he's looking at is more entertaining than this. This is boring. Back and forth, everybody have a swing, you know, back, swinging their kids. It's boring. This is entertaining. But what's more meaningful, you see? And we've become a society where, you know, we're just reduced to being entertained, right? And those who control entertainment, news, games, you know, are just they're very smart, right? And they're very sophisticated in continually keeping us entertained, interested. And we have to understand what we're dealing with. That's why, to me, you know, meditation and this kind of thing is no longer a luxury. You know what I mean? It's really, everybody's going to need it. Because there's got to be some way that you can disengage from this. Because it's, you know, they know how to keep you entertained. You know, I mean, I grew up in the 50s. You know, there were like three channels. You know, it was like, right? You know? And then there were more channels, and then there was cable, and then there were hundreds of channels, right? And that's just on TV. On the internet, it's like a wide open field, right? And now you can, on demand, I mean, you can, and it's all in the service of what? I mean, what's it all about? Making a better world? Making happier human beings? Teaching us how to connect and take care of one another? No, it's all in the service of what? What? Yeah, it's keeping us entertained so somebody can make money. I mean, that's really what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, if we just kind of cut through it all. You know, and it's unfortunately these days, it's up to each of us to decide, is that what my life's going to be about? Right? You know. You know, look what's going on in our world. Look what's going on in politics. Like, right? People are losing the ability to even think clearly and see what's going on right in front of them. I mean, there are probably lots of reasons for it, but one of the reasons is people are just entertained all the time, distracted. Anyhow. Does that answer your question? Yeah, we have to be clear. So we have a few minutes here. So this is quite profound. And I'll just, you know, there are many other times we give these kind of teachings. So I want to know the Buddha. Right? And obviously, you know, Most people would think of the Buddha as something, someone outside themselves, right? I want to know the Buddha mind. I want to know the awakened mind. I want to realize, you know, the enlightened mind, right? And we think it's somewhere we got to get to, right? Something we got to find. It's external to ourselves. So right away, Pei Chang goes, you want to see the Buddha? It's like riding, like seeing an ox when you're riding on one. So he's going, what's he saying? You're already, right. Your question even is riding that ox. Right? All your thoughts, all your yearnings, you're already, you know, it's all supported by the ox. Your Buddha mind is right here. Everything you yearn for is right here. I mean, there's a lot here, but I mean, just very simply. And what shall I do after I know that? So in other words, once one has a real understanding, that one actually has an experience of seeing the ox itself and realizing, I've already, you know, I've been riding it my whole life, right? It's not something out there. It's not something new. Then what do you do? It's like a man, now you're going home, you see? Before you were looking for the ox, thinking it's somewhere out there. Now you realize, I'm riding the ox. And I'm riding it now home. I'm going it in the other direction now. I'm coming home. But what am I riding home? I'm riding my mind home. It's the same mind. And many people have a problem with that because when we do some meditation and we look in our mind, we go, whew, what a worthless thing. Huh? We can't believe that somehow this very mind is everything that we seek, is this mind itself. Right? We can't believe that. And then so in this riding home, in this awareness that my mind is Buddha and now I'm going to ride it home to return to my true self, to actualize all the inherent capacities of this mind, what do I do? And Pai Chung says, it's like a man tending an ox. He looks after with a stick in his hands and does not let it intrude upon the unripe crops. I think this is really wonderful. Okay? So, what is an unripe crop? What is a ripe crop? You're ready for harvest, ready to eat. Ready, right? It's ripe, right? But before the crop ripens, before the fruit ripens, it's what's called, it's not ripe, right? Right? If you eat an unripe mango, how's it going to taste? Yucky. How's an unripe banana going to taste? Terrible. Unripe tomato? Terrible. You know, all your crops, all your food, when they're not ripe, they have, you know, you can't even get the nutrition out of them, right? And they're not tasty, right? So you have to let and wait till what? It ripens. Okay, so from the point of view of our true nature, we're already Buddhas. But from the point of view of the path, there's a path to be walked. There's a fruit that needs to be ripened. Is that clear? So this is about us, you see. So when he talks about, he looks after with a stick in his hand and doesn't let it intrude upon the unripe crops. What are our unripe crops? Do you know what your unripe crops are? Something you're trying to plant, but it's not edible yet. What is that? What? No, this is your unripe crop. This is the things you want to grow. Yeah, patience, love, compassion, understanding, wisdom, you know, all those wonderful things. Sense of connection. Those are all, you know, anything that you can think about, right, that you want to cultivate in yourself, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? Mindfulness, concentration, You know, all those things. At this point, they are all what? Unripe. Right? You can't just freely eat them. They won't give you the nutrition you need. These are our unripe crops. Right? Okay. Now, if we want them to grow and ripen, like we'd all do, right, we have to tend this ox, which at this point is not a well-trained ox. It's not a well-trained mind, right? It will destroy the unripe fruit, right? So this is very powerful. He's saying, you know, if you say you want to cultivate love, compassion, understanding, peace of mind, ease of mind, intelligence, wisdom, you know, all those things that you want to cultivate, and you let that mind run amok in your field, you're never going to be able to eat, you know, the fruit's not going to ripen. Is that clear? That's what he's telling us, right? Do not let it intrude upon the unripe crops. How do we not let it intrude? We watch our mind. When we see it's beginning to intrude, and many of us will go, well, it's trying to intrude about every 2 minutes. Right? That's what mindfulness is about. It's about watching your mind. You've got to keep giving it a tug. Right? It's an understanding that is, you know, you don't hate the ox because it wants to get into the farmer's fields, do you? No, that's it. That's the nature of the ox. You don't hate it, right? I mean, I have grandchildren. I don't hate them because they like to not listen, because they like to misbehave. They like to get into all kinds of things, right? You know. That's their child nature, isn't it? Right? My job is what? When I'm taking care of them, is to what? To watch them. To watch over them and to keep them from doing harm. Is that clear? Right? Our job is to caretake this mind of ours so the fruits, the crops we are planting can ripen. Coming back, what is your name back? Marie. So as Marie said, see, Marie, the problem is if we're not doing that, right? If we kind of, like, I'm just going to use you as an example. It's probably not true for you, but let's say Marie works, like she was saying, she works very diligently, plants all her seedlings, and she gets distracted, right? Oh, something. And she goes out there and kind of leaves things, right? And she wonders why they never grow and come to fruition, you see? Because oftentimes we're not doing that necessity of caretaking, watching over these little plants, these little seedlings, right? Because we are, you know, distracted, or else we let in the opposite. You know, we let anger run rampant, we let fear run rampant, we let jealousy run rampant, we let, you know, impatience and, you know, all these things run rampant in the field of our mind. And we wonder why we never, you know, we're not becoming more patient, more loving. Well, how can we if we're not caretaking these seeds? So this is very powerful. And then later on he said, I didn't study Zen. I mean, he did, but he's really saying, well, when somebody asked him, he said, no, I didn't study the Zen of the master. I just tended my ox. That's really what brought me to realization. If it went astray from the path and entered the grass, I'd pull it away. See, I like this too. When it's himself, you see, when it's his own mind within himself going astray, he just gives it a tug, brings it back on the path. If it intruded on other people's crop, I would flog it with a whip to tame it. I like this. Because this is really very in the tradition of, which is essential to all Buddhist teachings, is in terms of behavior, do no harm, right? You know, like that's the cardinal rule, do no harm, right? If you can't do good, at least do no harm, right? So it's interesting that when he talks about within himself, he gives it the pull, right? But when he sees that his mind is intruding onto somebody else's field, which is means, I think what he's saying is, but when I see that this mind is now beginning to move me in direction of doing harm to another, you see, then I use the whip on it. You see, I'm stronger. And I think this is a very important, and it shows the kind of the sense of interconnection and this responsibility for the world and others, you know, that we have to be doubly vigilant, right? That we don't let our water buffalo, you know, destroy other people's crops, right? I mean, that's, and a lot of times our actions, our words, our behavior are doing harm to other beings. We're not nurturing their unripened fruit. Is that clear? We all know we do that. And I like this that he says, you know, when I see my ox doing that, then I get out the whip. You know, I mean, right away I prevent that from happening. I'd flog it if it intruded on other people's crops. I would flog it with a whip in order to tame it. And then he says a great thing. For a long time, it was looking miserable, having to listen to a human voice. I think this is so human, right? We get sick of ourselves, don't we? You know? You see? And I think, you know, this is like a century. And he goes, and he's just talking about this mind of ours, you know? This untrained mind that wants to go wherever it wants to go and do whatever it wants to do, it gets sick of us trying to train it, right? I mean, I remember when I was raising my own kids, it was like, yeah, I mean, they must be sick of having me all the time tell them what to do and not do, right? I mean, I used to think, you know, in those days when they were young and, you know, they couldn't go in the fridge without asking, you know, because they, what would that be like if every time, as an adult, I couldn't go in the fridge myself. I had to go ask somebody whether it was okay if I went in the fridge to get something. I mean, you know what I mean? That would be horrible. What a way to live. And yet, I felt my poor kids, this is what they're dealing with. You know, somebody tells them when to go to bed, when to get up, right? So I think this is meaningful to go. You know, there is a process here. In the early stages of our process, when we have to be kind of more on ourselves, you know, it could be a little miserable to really be aware of ourselves and to see how much our mind is running amok and, you know, and the harm we're doing to ourselves and others. It could make us in the short term a little miserable, right? Having to listen to a human voice all the time. But now it has become a white ox in an open field, always on my side, spending the day in vast open fields. Even if someone tries to take advantage of it, it does not go away. So now he's on the other side, okay? All the crops have ripened. All the fruits have ripened. It's now a white ox, right? It always, when it was a dirty ox and now it's a clean ox, when it was a dark ox and now it's a white, you know, what he's saying is, it's still an ox, you see. It hasn't changed in its nature, it's still an ox, but now it's been purified of all its defilements. It's like after taking a bath, you know, we're clean. Let's say we're covered with mud or there's a mirror and it's covered with mud, right? Then we clean it. Now it reflects perfectly back. Well, it always was a mirror, even when it was dirty. That hasn't changed. its ability to reflect back hasn't changed, right? The only thing is now it's the mind has been purified of its delusions, its afflictions. In the same way, it's not like we're going to get a new mind. You think, I have my deluded, miserable mind, and then one day I'm going to get this Buddha mind, and everything will be good. We hope for that. And then many people are disappointed, right? Because it's not like that. It's the same. This is the Buddha mind. It's just covered over, right? It's just covered over. We don't see what's right here because it's covered with this cocoon of thoughts and misperceptions and emotional afflictions. But it's right here, okay? So it's still the ox is still the ox. Remember the untamed ox that would just trample about in everybody's field? And now the tamed ox. Same ox. Same mind. That's what transformation is. Transformation means it's the same thing. It just takes on a new form, but it's essentially the same. But now it has become a white ox in open field, always on my side. How would that be? Many people, they're sort of at war with their mind. In conflict, struggling with their mind, right? No longer. The mind is now well-trained. It's responsive, right? Tell it to stop, it stops. Tell it to go, it goes. Very simple. No more struggle, no more having to pull, yank, beat, flog. Very simple. Go left, go right. It's like a well-trained, I'm not a horse person, but they say, you know, a well-trained horse, you can almost do it with your legs, right? Is that right? I mean, you know, you don't even, somebody, if it's either an untrained horse or an untrained horse person, you're always what? Yanking it around and beating it, and right? But a well-trained horse it can just all be in the legs, or just the slightest little, you know, shift of the reins, and it goes. Who wouldn't want a mind like that? So that's what he's talking about. But now it has become this white ox in an open field, always on my side, spending the day in vast open fields. Even if someone tries to take advantage of it, it does not go away. It never leaves my side. Your mind becomes your companion rather than your enemy. Becomes your friend. Yeah, so that's... Any questions or comments on this teaching? Watching the mind, tending the ox. So, you know, we're about halfway over with our day of mindfulness. We had a good kind of beginning this morning in just kind of basic mindfulness, body. So, you know, for the rest of the day, I mean, there's going to be lunch now and then a little break time, and then there'll be, after lunch, there'll be mindful movements. Is that correct? And then there'll be guided meditation, and then I'll be back to interact with you. Do some more things. Watch your mind. See, for those of you who've never done it, and those of you who watch the mind based on what you've learned today, just keep an eye. And again, it is in the beginning, it's watching the mind. It's not about criteria yet. You're just kind of observing. You're just watching your mind. You're kind of interested, you see? Right? So if you were Bill, you'd just be interested. I'm just watching my mind. You know, running off here, running off there, getting into this field, messing around in that field, rutting around over here. You know, Just. you don't want me to get too personal, right? And you're just watching it. You know, it's like you want to learn about this mind. And then, you know, and then the next stage is to kind of have this criteria. You see when it gets into trouble, when it causes suffering. But you also see when it's good, you know, when it feels good or creates good things. So you're learning to support that, discourage that, right? So it's not as if you're going to be yanking all the time. You know, a lot of times, the ox goes where you want it to go. Or on its own, it's going to a good place. So you don't have to do anything, right? But other times, so is that clear? So for those of you who this is something new, just see what it's like to objectively, without judgment, watch your mind. You could even, for those of you new, you can even label it, you know. I don't know, thinking, or angry thought, or fantasizing, or ruminating. You see what I'm saying? You just kind of, it's like very generic, you know. Don't get into the story. Just you kind of watching your mind and see where it goes all day. You might be very interested. It may not be doing what you think it's doing, right? So you're just kind of this objective watcher of your mind. And then, based on the criteria, you know, that the Dharma gives us, we begin to make adjustments. We know what we want to cultivate and what we don't want to cultivate anymore. What brings us happiness, what causes us unhappiness. But the first step is just to watch the mind. No better instruction than that. Okay, so, you know, as we go about our day, as you're, you know, as you're eating your lunch mindfully, have a little part of yourself, 20-25%, just kind of watching your mind. What's it up to? It's supposed to be, you know, just present eating the lunch, right? Where's it go? You see? Everybody here is unique. Right? Some may just go into meaninglessness, you know, stupid stuff. Some may go into dramas, past, future. Some may go into heavy-duty judgment or criticism, likes, dislikes. Ugh. This food's not as good as I thought it would be. Looks like Bill has something a lot more tasty. Begin to watch your mind. You know how it maybe has this element of always being dissatisfied and always thinking. You know, kind of just watch it. Okay? Any questions? And then, you know, when you're doing the mindful movements or whatever, do the mindful movements, but also watch your mind. Where does it go? See, everybody's mind goes to different places, right? There may be everybody just maybe all doing whatever we're doing, the same thing, and yet everybody's mind's going somewhere else. Where is it going? Or is it not? Is it totally present, relaxed, focused? When it goes away, where does it go? Where does it like, you know, what? Whose field does it like to get into? Is that clear? This is where it begins. And then we learn to make modifications as our practice develops.